Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
All right, everyone ready?
Have you been recording
not
any
at
of
all,
this?
But yes.
Yes, it's all recording and I'm not using it.
What? Why do you keep doing...
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know what? You edit the fucking show. How about that?
Fine, I'll edit it just as well as they do tweets. Late,
there you go.
Nobody bothers them.
Well, that shut them up.
Yeah. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Purnell's here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. My arms hurt, and I just ate a big bowl of lima beans. So yeah,
great. Wait, lima beans?
Yeah, I'm trying to eat more vegetables, but the problem is I suck at choosing them and making ones that seem appealing. So what ends up happening is I grab whatever's in the fridge, which happened to be a giant bag of lima beans. So I cooked them, and then threw some Maggi hot and spicy seasoning on it, which is like one calorie, and was like, "There's my dinner."
That's
you burn
gross.
That one calorie just describing it.
Good stuff.
No, there's nothing good about lima beans.
No,
hey, lima beans are good. It's just I'll admit the way I prepare them, they can use more, like some I don't know, a ham hock.
Don't even get to the rest of the hello. Like, what is with this episode tonight? Like, anyway,
you get for booking everyone on the same show. You have no one to blame but yourself.
I mean, the only additions are Jacob and Ogley, and they hang out most of the time.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah.
That's what you get for choosing a night where I ate lima beans for dinner.
So, yeah, everyone's here. The whole crew is here. We've got Aki. We've got Chris. We've got Brooke, Jacob, Purnell, and Tim. Everyone is here. I'm here, too.
Hello, everyone.
Everyone's
hey, here.
I'm sorry.
And Ashley's hanging out in the background. SML She's ultimate. Waving. Say hi, Ashley.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Ashley. See, there everyone is here. It's truly super SML Ultimate.
Super SML Ultimate.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Does that mean it's time for a Christmas break?
Oh, I'm all for that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm good with that.
Not July. That's July.
But it could be April.
Christmas in April. That's a new concept.
So how was everybody's weekend? Was it good?
No, it was good. It was good. I actually cannot complain about my weekend. I opened a new board game.
I don't know what that answer
was. It was good. It was good. I opened a new board game. I got some exercise. My house is still a complete clusterfuck of disarray, but it's just because I have too much stuff and I need a bigger house. But otherwise, yeah, it's been a good time.
Mine was great, too. I built like 5 or 6 different Gunpla instead of working on review games because I'm a derp.
Good job.
Nice.
Yeah.
Brooke, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good.
That's it.
Can't complain.
Chris, how about you?
Whoa. Hold on. We just talked to Brooke and we didn't get a Bun Bun update.
Yeah, how's Brisket? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He's doing really good. He's doing awesome. Just loping around.
It's like I'm proud to acknowledge that my rabbit has maintained its status of alive.
He's still alive.
Still adorable.
Hell yeah. I watch the videos and then show them to my kids. It's like, look at this bunny. Then they're like, God. Look at that bunny.
Don't you wish it was your bunny? Well, you can't.
I do.
Because Papa don't have it.
Although my kids do too. And I'm just like, you guys can't even change your dog's water bowl on a regular basis. No, we're not getting more.
Hey, you know, good job, you know, saying no, because a lot of parents getting bunnies randomly this time of year, it's close to Easter, and they are a high maintenance pet. So that's all I'll really say this week for the chat portion. Good job not getting your kids bunnies.
Oh yeah, no, like saying no to my kids is like my favorite hobby, actually.
I believe it.
Tell us how you really feel.
Tim, do you like saying no to your kid?
I mean, I have to. I didn't ask for these powers.
How was your weekend?
You used them responsibly.
Fine.
Just fine?
Yeah, just
you don't sound fine. You sound sick.
It was a long week. I was off because my wife just got a new job, so I was off with the child every single day for 9 days straight. I mean, she was off.
No wonder you sound sad. Okay,
so it was like, and coupled with like just sleep deprivation for leading off the week by staying up till midnight three nights in a row watching fucking wrestling, and then just various other things keeping me up late. This podcast included last week, but then it was just like. And it was like rainy and cold, so outdoor activity was kind of like, I don't know. It wasn't stellar.
Well, after the show today, go to bed and just don't wake up until like noon tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that, and my job will be wondering where I am, and my child won't be on the bus, and
just call in sick. You'll be fine.
The reality is my body is just going to wake me up at like 6:30 anyways. That's part of the problem is I can't.
That's gross.
Well, I mean, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. So
I don't drink coffee.
What if I play baseball?
I don't
like coffee in my cup then.
I can't sleep in anymore. Whatever, I just wake up and that's it. It doesn't make me less tired.
Like the plot of a horror movie. Just can't sleep in anymore.
You want to know what's crazy?
What?
Our last episode. Also crazy is the fact that
this Lloyd is the last episode? Oh my God.
Our actual last episode, our previous episode, featuring Mr. Mel Kirk of Zen Studios, has been obliterating our listener records. It is just it is the most listened to episode in years. And I attribute it to Mel and his loose lips on the show.
I was going to say, I'm sure like, you know, people in like the pinball verse or whatever, were just like, oh shit, we got to listen to this. So
yeah. So it's pretty cool that we actually have an episode that someone listened to.
So does this mean that we need to stop covering video games and only cover pinball?
I think so.
Or change the name of the show to SDL. Someone did listen.
We remember we remember fondly that time in 2023 when someone did listen, and we memorialize it with our new name.
Nah, that would require a lot of work with rebranding, and
I just like this idea of like a truck pulling up to each of our houses like every Wednesday or whatever with a brand new pinball machine.
Ooh.
Right now I'm just appreciating that the episode titled Beefy Dingle Dongs is outviewing the episode with Mustin. It has been up longer, but still.
I don't like that.
Yeah, well, he can.
I feel like Mustin will be proud of
my beefy dingle dong.
It's like, I hate losing to which episode, but if it's the episode's called Beefy Dingle Dongs, I can't hate that.
It makes sense why you lost then.
Just hits the metrics, you know.
It does. It's crazy which episodes become popular and which ones no one listens to.
Yeah. And the sad part is like there's nothing out there that can give you any actual context at all, so you have to just kind of infer, like, maybe the fact that the word is dingle dong made people chuckle and go, what's that about? I'd better listen.
I'm going to attribute the fact that we got a lot of listeners on the last episode to the fact that we accidentally revealed Bethesda Pinball.
That'll do it.
Yeah. Or at least Doom.
If it works, it works. If it works, it works.
Yeah, good shit. But we have a lot of games to talk about tonight. Should we dive into these reviews?
See, sure. Get my scuba gear out. Hang on.
Now he's underwater again. Brooke, you ready to start things off?
I'm ready.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is Process of Elimination, developed by Nippon Ichi Software, published by NIS America, released April 11th on the Switch and PS4 for $39.99. A hapless student finds himself among a group of talented detectives and must take part in their investigation to stop a prolific serial killer that hides among their ranks. Can they solve the case before they're all eliminated? Brooke, what is going on in Process of Elimination?
All right,
real quick though, Brooke, I was going to just say the stakes are high. I got a pre-order on this one, so let me know if my money is safe.
Okay, you pre-ordered Process of Elimination?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Cool.
That does not sound like that bodes well.
Right. Well, I am going to compare it to a couple of games that I know you love in this review, but I would say you personally take that with a grain of salt, because I think I'm really loosely comparing them to that. I don't want you to hear the word Persona and get super excited, Purnell, so
I mean,
all right. All right, I'm going to start us off here. I'm a little sleepy, so apologies in advance. Okay, have you ever played a narrative-rich anime mystery, murder mystery, and you're like, damn, I really like this, but I wish that we didn't have to do any fighting. I wish I could just, like, read the dialogue and story and just kind of skip the crazy grindy mind dungeons and whatnot if we're playing in Persona. If you have, there's a chance that this might be the game for you. So this game opens up a bit of a similar manner as some other anime games out there. We've got a couple humans in animal masks. We can't see their faces, and the initial scene is narrated by a disembodied voice with a voice changer over it being used on it, so it's ultra anonymous and creepy. Oh shit, there's an anime crime going on here. And now things start to get a little different from the other games that open up in this way. And now the voice is talking to us. It's asking us to make a choice between the two men, apparently, whose faces are under these masks. They're also tied to chairs, turns out. And we only know one thing about each of them. The one on the left is a college grad. The one on the right, we just know he's like a shut-in, quote-unquote. So now we have a choice. Which one do we select to be murdered? Thinking quickly, I obviously chose the shut-in, no questions asked. I was like, let's kill the grad, I hate guys like that. And the voice is like, okay, well, are you sure? Because, like, I'm going to lay some more facts at you now. The shut-in was bullied at school, and he decided to give up on the world. But every day he comes home and he physically beats his mom, who raised him alone. Oh. And she lets him live with her as an adult, and he still beats the crap out of her every day. Do you want to kill him or not? And I'm over here like, nah, I don't regret my choice, because what I didn't tell y'all about these animal masks is... the shut-in's mask was a rabbit's mask. And rabbits will always be protected by me. But luckily for the non-rabbit, the game kind of narratively pans out here and reveals to us that the disembodied voice isn't just talking to us. It's not just talking to me, Brooke. It's talking to a bunch of people, because apparently we're on a game show and he's put this rabbit man's life in the hands of the people. If enough people vote on their devices to keep him alive, he will. But it turns out the voice doesn't get the votes that he needs for the rabbit. He apparently needs 500 votes to keep this man alive. He doesn't get them. And boom, we hear some violence, some gross sound effects, and the screen is covered in blood. And the rabbit shut-in man is dead. Pretty jarring beginning to this murder mystery anime game. But luckily, we were never even there. We were just watching TV or something, and we've just seen the latest report on the new big thing all the news outlets are talking about nowadays. It's a serial killer called the Quartering Duke, who keeps kidnapping a bunch of people and putting them in this weird death game show. Man, everybody hates this guy, especially you. Especially you. You are a young detective, and you hate crime. And you have recently become a new young detective, and you want to be a wonderful detective. It's your life's dream. So you go outside to work on your next assignment. It's trying to capture this guy who's been murdering people's pets. You really hate that too. So you run into an old man. He seems sus. You start questioning him, and he's like, yo, I can tell that you're clearly a detective, and you're like not even a very good one. You're questioning me all wrong. Like, what's going on? Are you nervous? And you get super nervous, and you're like, damn, how do you know? This sucks. Like, I want to be a really good detective. And he's like, of course I would know, kid. I'm one of the best detectives out there. Don't you recognize me? And now you're really nervous. You're like, oh, yeah, yeah, you look familiar, man. You're like a famous detective, aren't you? And he's like, yep. And you know, just random question for you. I know we just talked about how you're not a very good detective. Remember how we just talked about that man? You're like, yeah, yeah, that was like 5 minutes ago. And he goes, well, don't worry, because you're not that bad, because I'm going to invite you to join an elite group of the most famous and best detectives ever. We're on a special project. We're trying to crack a top case. It's called The Quartering Duke. Maybe you've heard of him, big serial killer guy. And you're like, oh, hell yeah, man, I hate that guy. I was just thinking about this. And he's like, okay, cool, cool, sounds good. And he shoots you in the neck with the syringe, and you pass out. This is like the first 5 minutes of the game. A lot of this game, like... you know, you don't want to be given spoilers, so I'm just telling you what happens in the beginning. You wake up, and now you are inside of a school locker, just in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere, in like the woods on an island in the middle of the sea. You open the locker, and you roll out, and you seem to have been in there for a while. You got nothing else on you except the clothes you were wearing when you got abducted, and a little iPad-type thing. The iPad starts talking to you and shows you that there's a map on your device directing you to go to a building. You walk over there and you meet a ragtag crew of crazy detectives just like you who have agreed to help out with the Quartering Duke Project, is what they're calling it. You hang out with them for a while. Each of them is a pretty colorful anime character with like some anime thing going on. There's like a kid in a wheelchair with two different colored eyes. He's called the Techie Detective, and they've all got like a cool nickname that kind of tells you what their personality or special gift as a detective is like. You don't have any special gifts, so they quickly name you the incompetent detective, which you don't like, but they're like, yeah, we don't have time for this. We got to go with this. So you meet this whole group, you think, except then they're like, wait, you didn't meet everybody. This isn't everyone. And pretty soon y'all come across a dead body that was one of the crew of the people you just met. And everyone is like, oh my God. We have now discovered some clues that leads us to believe the killer is one of us. And guess what? There are a lot of them. Dude, there were a lot of detectives when they started out, and apparently 23 of them have been killed on this island. So there's way more than just this one murder. Who could be murdering these detectives who were all abducted and put onto this mystery island? And unfortunately...
Never mind. Okay, I get what you're saying now, because I was just like, if this is like a small town on an island, like... You'd think they would have noticed 23 detectives, but I didn't realize you meant, like, you know, they put the detectives on an island.
Yeah, so we're, like, talking to each other, and we're like, oh, my God, each of us agreed to help with this special project, and each of us woke up, like, in a locker on the island. This is so crazy. Who could be doing this? And unfortunately, you guys are missing the biggest clue of all, because when you were originally syringed and knocked out, you didn't get to hear... that some crazy voice was like, this guy's going to be great for the detective elimination project. That's when I need that sound effect. So, wow, you know, maybe these detectives weren't abducted by the government and put on this weird murder island just to help people. Maybe something else is going on. Damn, that's crazy. So that's the setup of this game.
This sounds pretty wild.
That is the premise of this anime game.
So is it based on a show, or is it just like that's the art style?
Not that I know of. I don't think it's based on a show. I think this game reminds me most of like 9 hours, nine persons, nine doors, if we want to compare it to another
game.
Yo, did you play that?
Oh yeah. That game rules.
The best.
So I really like that game. I haven't finished this isn't like the longest game in the world. I don't know if this is like supposed to be longer than like 999 or something, but I will say I haven't finished it and gotten to the thrilling conclusion yet. So I can't say if it pays off quite as much as I think 999 does, but I am having a good time in it so far. I do like anime games that do their murder mystery thing. And before we launch into, you know, rating here, the thing that sets this game apart from stuff like 999 or just like a murder visual novel is it's not quite just a visual novel. Most of this game is dialogue, and most of it is just like the story you're reading through. But so you're not fighting for sequences of like gameplay that are strategic. You're like, flipping through my notes here. Kind of been a long day. Okay, so it's broken up to have parts throughout the game where you're basically moving yourself and all the other detectives around who are available at the time around on a grid. You're not fighting, but you're like moving each other onto different squares next to a glowing mystery or clue icon that they can interact with. They can solve little mysteries on the grid, or they can collect clues, almost like a Clue, the board game thing going on. Like you can find a bloody knife and that can like teach you some things. It kind of goes into your inventory or like a journal. Sometimes you'll discover an evidence item and that's kind of like a bloody knife or something. But yeah, these parts of the game are called investigation segments. I do find there's a lot of flexibility in these segments to be able to, like... I think this game is kind of like 999 and that you're never going to play this game more than once, even if there is some variation in gameplay. I don't think it's going to make you solve all the little mysteries and, like, multiple choice question evidence, like, breakups. The same ability there, but... overall, it's going to have roughly the same plot, I believe, no matter how you play it. Maybe there's like a slightly different ending at the end, but I'll have to update you after I finish it for that.
I am looking up. It looks to be a good like 20-hour game, so there it is, a beefy game.
That's cool. I was wondering beefy. If like it was closer to like
beefy dangle
20 hours. I saw one guy was talking about this game, and he was like, oh, yeah, if you know all the answers, you could defeat this game in, like, 10 hours. And I know that I typically take longer to finish a game than other people, so I'm probably on the opposite end of the spectrum from that guy. But, like, this feels closer to a 20, 30-hour game than, like, 10 to 15.
Also, a person that comes at you and says, like, if you know all the answers, well, that's kind of the point. It's more of a narrative game, which means you won't know the answers.
Yeah,
so,
you gotta figure that shit out. But Pernell, do you have any questions about the game since you have a pre-order riding on this?
I mean, it sounds like, I mean, the time she put in, it sounded like she enjoyed what she was getting out of it, though. Now, it didn't like really like wow her or anything, but I mean, at the same time, it's being rated against a pedigree like Trump 999, so yeah. I'm gonna knock that. But, would you, I noticed there's like some like weird board game-ish elements that I've seen in like screenshots, which is partly what got me really tweaked about it. Like, do you feel that flowed in a way that kept you interested, or was it more of an annoyance and a hindrance to getting back to the plot?
I think the game actually benefits from that. And like, I can, especially like before I joined the show and I found more out about my taste in games just from hanging and talking with y'all. Like, I used to be one of the players, especially like between the ages of 25 to 30, where I'm like, I don't want to fight. I want to just find out the story. Or like, I would pick up a Persona game and be like, I don't want to do these dungeons. I just want to know what happens or whatever. So normally you got to do something really cool gameplay wise to even get me into that sort of thing. I thought the segments where you're moving people around in the grid were cool. I wasn't wishing that those were over. And I didn't think, like, I think they're engaging and you can kind of play them in a different ways. But they're also like, I thought the way they introduced the ideas of those sections were like, they did a good job with the tutorial of like how that part of the game works. And I was probably like 3 hours into the game before I got one of those. Like, I thought it was just going to be a visual novel. And then when we opened up the grid, I was like, oh, whoa, interesting. I wonder if I'm going to like the grid or if I'm going to wish it was over. And I was just clicking through the game. You can move detectives next to each other. Like, they all have different like stats. You almost have a party and you can move them next to each other. If you don't think one of them could solve the little mystery icon by itself, it won't be like the detective has to solve a question. It'll be like, does the detective have the ability to like do this by themselves? If not, they need to like ask for help. And then you're sort of like almost on a turn-based thing where you're moving people around. It's almost like a Clue the board game thing where you've only got so many spaces that some of them can move to get to each other. I thought it was interesting. Sometimes I feel like games are phoning that in, like, oh, let's make a new strategy system, but it's not fighting. Let's do something completely different and reinvent the wheel. I don't think they're trying to like make a completely new game anyone's ever seen before. But at the same time, I thought it didn't feel pointless to me. So like, that's a super long way to answer that question, but I think it's good they put it in there. And I think it's a fun enhancement to what would otherwise just be a VN murder mystery.
Super long, but super informative, which is what I want. So nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that was an answer for Pernell, you can tell.
All right.
I feel like I'm comfortable with my pre-order now, so...
Cool. Thank the game you. Is $40. Brooke, what are your thoughts?
I think if you tend to like anime mystery games, this is easily worth $40 for you. I think it's more of a try it if you've never, you know, paid $40 to $80 for an anime game. You know, you might want to just make sure you like how the premise sounds or how that gameplay works out before you jump in there. But yeah, I think for nerds like me and Pernell, this is a buy it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, next up is Raven's Watch, developed by Pastech Games, published by Nacon, released April 6th on Steam for $19.99. Fallen heroes of old folk tales and legends, you are on the verge of a crucial battle against the nightmare invading and corrupting your world, a roguelike action game from the creators of Curse of the Dead Gods, playable solo or in online co-op. Tim, tell us about your time with Raven's Watch.
Curse of the Dead Gods, also a roguelike action game. But yeah, I actually reviewed that game a couple of years ago, and I thought it was quite good. Even if it got kind of overwhelmed in the long wake of Hades that just dominated everything for like a year. But it was still a good game. Anyways, yeah, this is their new business, which is on Steam Early Access. This is an Early Access preview, if you will. Yeah, you can tell that this game was developed by that team because it just kind of has the same graphical style to it, which fortunately is a good one. So it's good that they stuck with that. Just has like a nice kind of cel shady moody look to it. And yeah, so early access. It feels like there's information you need to figure out either on your own or, I don't know, maybe like going to their Discord or website or something, and maybe there's more information there because they just kind of like you pick your character and then they drop you in there with little explanation as to what's going on and what you need to accomplish. But yeah, right now there are four characters, and yeah, as was mentioned in the copy, based on kind of folklore and mythology, you could play as Beowulf from the story Beowulf. He's got a big sword. He has a little dragon buddy. There is a Red Riding Hood who turns into a werewolf at night. There is an Ice Queen, which I don't know, I'm just assuming is based on Frozen. And there's the Pied Piper, who has like a bunch of little infected rats that follow him around. And was my favorite of the four characters. I did give each one of them a try. So they drop you into a sort of, you know, randomly procedurally generated map. And your goal there, it'll tell you right off the rip that, you know, some horrible evil is going to awaken in 4 days. There is a day-night cycle that passes every few minutes. Like I said, Red Riding Hood, specifically when it's nighttime, turns into a wolf. And during the day, she is a little girl who stabs things, just like in the fable. And your job is to, it'll have like a couple markers on the map to kind of inform your journey. But the idea is this horrible great old one is going to erupt from the ground in 4 days, and you need to kill the thing. And so you have that amount of time to power up your character slash weaken the boss so that you can defeat it and clear the level. And boy, what a task this is when you're by yourself. It feels like it feels like the game is very in its current state. You know, again, early access all day. It feels like it's very tuned for the multiplayer experience. And that just like the I found it was tough for me to get around these maps with any kind of like speed. You know, there's enemy mobs around everywhere. And just trying to explore enough in that, you know, 4 day time span to get powerful enough was tough, because the further kind of away you get from the starting point, you get into like the nooks and crannies at the edges of the map. There's much stronger enemies that take longer to kill, unless you're suitably powered up. I was not able to kill that sucker. There are encounters, because so there will be like different like kind of random encounters dotted around the map. And one of them is you'll find like the great old ones, like tentacles poking up from the ground. There's like a fight you can do there that will then weaken the boss battle, that will reduce its health substantially. You know, there's time challenges for getting bonuses. You know, treasure chests around. As you go, your character will gain experience and level up. When you level up, you will choose an upgrade for one of your abilities. Each character has five abilities that they start out with, like right dropped into the world. They each have specific category names, which again I did not find to be explained anywhere in particular, but it's like you have a basic attack, usually something movement related, like a defense, a special, and a couple other ones. The only one that's locked is the ultimate, your ultimate ability, which you unlock once you reach like level 5, I think it is, something like that. So you drop into level and you want to get to level 5 because you want that ultimate ability. But as you're opening chests, you'll also find other bonuses, like equipment that will enhance, you know, give you other abilities for health regeneration or more damage or what have you. That's the game. Is you go out, you explore this map, you try to get yourself up to snuff, and then challenge the boss, and hopefully you beat it, and you get out of the world. I just, in my experience, I found it difficult to cover a lot of ground with just one character. Like, I don't think you're meant as a single player to be able to explore the entire map before the time runs out, but I could easily see how if you had two or three, or optimally like four players, you know, you could break off into teams and really cover some ground and really weaken the boss, and get pretty tough. And you know, that seems like it's probably the optimal experience, though, even just like single player, like there's clearly some merit to what the game is doing. Like, the characters are all very cool to play around with. Even though I had my favorite in the Piper, like, they are all very distinct from one another. There is more than enough space on the character select screen for at least twice that number of characters. So it, you know, it's cool just to, you know, okay, do a run with one, then do a run with another. When you complete a run, that character does gain experience so that they will be more powerful on future runs, which is important, obviously. But yeah, it's been in early access for like a week. And early access is a good thing for roguelikes, I feel like, when there's just like so much tuning to make the game, you know, feel good and right and rewarding. Only like chapter one is in the game right now. That one map that I mentioned. Oh, they say there's 6 heroes. I haven't seen 6 heroes. Well, I guess that's coming soon. Yeah. They're adding Aladdin.
Ooh.
To the game. And I can't read the other one. Because I'm kind of lean back. But yeah, they have a roadmap on there. They're adding another hero later in the spring. Additional ultimate abilities. Summer, they're adding the second map. And then at some point after that, there is the third map and more heroes and new enemies and new Master Nightmare, you know, just more shit. So it sounds like the game's going to be in early access for probably a good year plus, I would assume, if their current roadmap goes to summer. And then they have they say 1 year is how long they think they're going to be in early access. So the journey has just begun with Raven's Watch.
What kind of feedback would you give to them right now?
Well, I mean, like the premise of the game is good. If I am actually correct and the game is undertuned for single player, you know, that might be something to look at. But you know, they know the things they have to layer in. Like, there's just a lot of kind of basic like tooltips and stuff that the game could use to just kind of direct you with the basics of, you know, I had to puzzle out what the objective was on my own, just jumping into the game and like kind of figure out what abilities were what. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, it just got out there. They know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it comes to these games, just having, you know, more stuff is what you need to, you know, make the runs varied and,
yawn attack.
And keep player interest over time, because the last thing you want is, you know, for a player to go in there and feel like every run is the same thing and just get bored. But I haven't seen anything quite like this, so I think there's, you know, I nothing but promise in this particular game.
Well, yeah. It's sitting at $20 right now. They do anticipate the price will increase as content releases, and they will give advance notice of any kind of pricing changes. But right now it's at $20. Is it worth getting in at this price? Should we wishlist it? Should we keep an eye on it? What do you think?
Should probably wishlist it. I would say, you know, people know where they're at on early access at this point. It feels to me like maybe the better jumping on point will be later in the summer when there is a chapter two to play. Because it feels like right now, like if you were to, it feels like you'd probably get through chapter one pretty easily. Like if you got with a couple friends, like you'd get through it in like a night, you know. Like I was getting it together and starting to figure things out and how to deal with the boss like on my own after a handful of runs. So, you know, you're going to want more content, I think. And you're not, you know, cause I feel like sometimes you get into them and you kind of play what's there and then you walk away and then they keep updating and then you forget to come back. And then, you know, what are you even doing? So at least, you know, but I'm sure the developers would prefer to hear buy the thing now. But, you know, it's good. It's worth wishlisting, if nothing else.
Cool. But, Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, Tim, that is it for you. We will let you get going so you can get your night-nights.
My night-nights, yeah.
Go nap.
Sounds great. Yeah.
You have any final thoughts, final words before we let you go?
Hey, did nobody else see the Mario movie?
No. I did not.
We saw this weekend, hopefully, for not me.
Oh yeah.
Nah, I figured there was going to be way too many people out there, and it was just become a super spreader event.
Clearly, there was, because the movie made a shitload of fucking money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your wife actually instructed all of us to not see it, and that. What did she say? Like, not one part of it was good, or what?
So, I mean, we are currently in the minority opinion. I did not want to bring it up just to shit on it. But, you know, most everybody I know, like, loved it. And importantly, my kid loved it. So, you know, it is for kids. But just for me, and someone who is not a fan of Illumination movies and what they do in general, I was just like, oh, my God.
I just want to see a plumber get a fire flower. Does he get one?
I don't remember if he gets a... I don't think Mario gets a fire flower.
It was memorable.
I don't think Mario gets a fire flower. Honestly, I think maybe, yeah, he gets other power ups for sure. Certainly.
Was there a scene where Italian plumber shot fire out of his hands? I don't know, man.
I don't think there was. I don't.
It's not a ringing endorsement.
But believe me, there are no shortage of references to the games in this movie.
You're saying consensus from nieces and nephews. It is awesome.
Yeah. I was going to say that the realization I had on Twitter discussing it a little bit was that, you know, this is basically Ready Player One if the exclusive frame of reference was the Mario series in like 80s Nintendo games, where it's just like, here's a reference. Here's a reference. Keep going. Here's a reference. Here's a reference. Keep. Here's a reference. Here's a reference. Dale North pointed out that, like, no, you know, there's lots of music from the games, like arrangements of music from the games, and like none of them were used for more than 10 seconds. Like, if there is a scene that calls for a longer piece of music, they licensed something.
I feel like my thought, keep in mind, I haven't seen it. I look forward to it eventually. But the vibe I got with the general idea of this movie, when I was reading people say, you know, the plot is pretty much like paper thin. Like, there's nothing going on here.
Well, yeah.
But you're here for some stuff. Well, I was like, okay, well, I watched the Mario Brothers Super Show. I watched Mario 3, and I watched Mario World, and I've actually looked back on them and watched them nostalgically in the last, like, 5 years here and there, too. And back then, and now, none of those shows, including the games, had anything even remotely close to a decent plot outside of, like, Mario RPG or something.
Adding to that, Super Mario Brothers 3, which is the best of the Mario games, is literally just a play that they're putting on for people.
It is the best one with a 3 in the name, unless it's followed by a D.
But yeah, it's like the reason why things like, you know, floating blocks have cast shadows against the sky and stuff is because it literally all is a play. So, like, there's no plot to it. It's just, they're just performing for you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's just the endless deluge of, like, just references and poorly executed jokes. Not that there isn't anything worth, you know, popping over, like Jack Black's charisma as Bowser is irresistible.
Provided you haven't spent the last 20 years, you know, shielding yourself against said charisma.
Yeah, I suppose.
I know some people who, it's not me. I like him, but, like, yeah, there's some people.
Like Jack Black can't be trusted.
Well, keep in mind, those people might be like, I don't like Jack Black. His charisma is too off. But then is this rando portraying Bowser? It's like, Bowser's charismatic. He does a good job being a charismatic turtle man, dragon man.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's putting in effort that the rest of the voice cast certainly isn't.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no, considering the rest of the voice cast. Yeah. But, yeah, so the only thing that I found really amusing, you know, prior to watching the movie myself, but I love that suddenly every, like, 35 to 45 year old person has apparently seen and loved the original 1993 Super Mario Brothers film. I had no idea right up until they announced a new film. I always thought that people either hated it or didn't see it.
Oh, they absolutely hated it
every single day.
I liked it too.
It's like, I like it for the campiness of it all. That's why I picture most people saying, like, if they like it, it's like, I just liked it because it just seemed like someone was trying, but they had no idea what Mario was.
Yeah, it occupied that very niche point in the early 90s where stuff was, like, kind of cyberpunky and, like, you know, Theodore Rex, lots of mixing puppets with people and just kind of making a weird show out of it, but oddly entertaining.
I like how if you search Super Mario Brothers 1993 on Google, and you know, when you search any movie, it pulls up like, you know, a bunch of information, including the cast in like order of crediting, like the part they played. So of course there's Luigi, there's Mario, and then there's Shigeru Miyamoto there for some reason, then Bowser, then Princess Daisy, and then the fifth build cast member is a woman who played a prostitute.
Oh yeah, her, yeah.
In the Mario movie?
Yes.
What?
Well, yeah. Because I guarantee that it's done. Like, you know, the certain cast members had that. Like, you know, I have to be listed, you know, first or whatever. Yeah. And then after that, it's just, you know, in order of appearance. So apparently, sure, the first person we see is a prostitute.
That's not the part that I'm not so much interested in the idea of like why the order exists. Just like I'm trying to picture, which is why I need to see the movie clearly. Like
they were originally, they started off in New York.
Yeah, they did in the new movie as well. I don't believe there's a prostitute in the new movie though. So
that's disappointing.
You're talking about the old movie. Okay.
Yes.
Wait a minute. No one's talking about
it. I said 1993, Purnell.
I'm drunk. I'm not drunk. I need an
excuse. Yeah, you're drunk on lima beans.
Yes.
All right. Well, anyways, I will take my leave and let y'all get on with it. And I'll catch y'all later.
Have a good one, Tim.
Later, friend.
See ya.
Night-night.
All right. Next game, Marfusha, developed by Hinyari 9, published by Playism, released April 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $11.99. A high-tempo shooting game with simple controls. Upgrade your character with cards and defend the gates from your enemies. Purnell, what is Marfusha?
I just described the plot. You're Marfusha, a girl who is made to defend the gates with weaponry. And that is the general premise of the game. But the actual gameplay loop consists of you playing over a series of days, controlling this girl by walking her from left to right, and firing on opposing mechanoids that are approaching the gate guarding your city, or your hometown, or your home, whatever you want to contextualize it with. And as they approach, they are pretty much gunning for the gate, to the gate itself, their intention being to destroy it and get inside. And your character is tasked with killing them. You start out with a generic pistol, and you can fire it without concern for running out of, you know, durability or anything like that. You do have a limited clip of ammo, though. And when you run out of ammo, you have to spend a bit of time to reload said gun and then fire it some more. Once you've cleared enough enemies to complete that day's activity or that day's wave, you'll go to a screen that will display three cards. And those cards are... I mean, that's actually for that. Before the cards, you'll get your pay slip because the government pays you every day for your hard-earned work. However, the downside to that is that this dystopian government is very much in love with the concept of taxing. So you'll get like a paycheck for $40, but then the actual outpay will be $4 because all of your money was taken by taxes and in fees and whatever for supporting Glorious Homeland or whatever. So you're always running on a bit of a budget. But then once you get after your paychecks, has been doled out to you, you'll see three cards. And those three cards will represent one of three upgrades you can buy during that day to further your advancement in future rounds. You can get firearms that are essentially different guns, but the guns come with durability, where you might start with a durability level of 9, and for each day you use that gun, the durability level goes down by 1. Once it gets to 0, you're back to using your default gun. You don't want to ever be using your default gun because it's atrocious. So never run out of weapon durability once you get your first upgraded gun. The next thing you can buy are field defense items, such as a barricade, which can be used to prevent enemies from approaching the gate until they destroy it. You can get spikes that you can lay on the ground, which will allow enemies to take damage when they walk over it. Mines that will explode on impact, and I feel like that's actually all I've come across from like that type of item. Some of those are persistent across multiple rounds. Most of them actually are persistent across multiple rounds, though the mines will be destroyed on a moment of impact, but the other ones can take a bit of a damage blow before they eventually go away. Then you get access to, I guess, one-time use really good guns, So, for example, the one you might have seen in a lot of the trailers is the buzzsaw gun. When you use this gun, you'll generate a swirling blade of death that will just stay on the screen and just rip through any enemies that are touching it until it eventually just breaks.
Nice.
But by the time it breaks, you've done a lot of damage. But then once it's used, it's done. If you don't use that item and then you buy another one that fills that category on a subsequent day, you kind of wasted it. So don't just buy a gun and then replace it without using it, because money is precious in this game.
No,
the last thing precious. You can buy. Oh, you yeah. The last thing you could buy is, well, I say aside from just defenses to build or repair your gate, is you can buy a coworker. You can, if every once in a while, a coworker will show up on the field, and if you see one, you can buy her. It's a girl that has a different type of gun, and like amongst the types of guns that you can buy yourself, except they don't give two hoots about ammo and whatnot. They're just blasted, and they're good for extra suppressor fire, cover fire. If you buy the same girl twice or three times, as in they show up on the options for the card purchases, and you buy the same person again, you upgrade them up to three total upgrades. So I found myself in a lot of situations where as the game progressed further onward, a less an advanced version of them popped up. Once I chose a coworker, I stuck with that coworker. Ride or die, baby. That's what we do here in Marfusha. So I had a hard time deciding, well, I want to try this other person out because they're expensive too. It's like 10 or 15 bucks per coworker card. And it's a total of 30 to upgrade one. It's hard to tell yourself, I'm just going to throw all that hard earned progress away and just get a new person to start off. Nah, not worth it. So after a certain number of days, you'll go back to your home base, and you'll be able to walk through it. It's a pretty small home because, unfortunately, again, dystopian era, and you'll get like propaganda words popping up on the top of the screen being spoken through the speakers, and the TV's blaring propaganda as you're walking by it as well. But you have three things you can do to kind of hopefully make yourself a little bit better for future games or future days. You can buy meal rations. If you get meal rations, you'll upgrade two random stats ranging from attack, bullet speed, magazine capacity, reload speed, shot accuracy, and firing rate. If you go take a shower, you'll upgrade your firing rate and your reload speed. And if you do, it was like one other thing you could do that upgrades just one thing. So I found myself playing the game in such a way where every once in a while, I'm just like, okay, depending on what has been upgraded so far, I'll just mainly use the thing that lets you potentially randomly get two things to upgrade, because you're more likely to get a larger gain of, you know, stat buffs as you go. Which I just realized, I forgot the one other card type you can buy. You could also buy card types that upgrade your stats, like your attack or whatever. It could be anywhere from like 1 to 3. You might get a card that rearranges the stats that says, okay, burn out an attack stat, but in exchange, all your other stats go up by 1. And just weird stuff like that, which is kind of cool. The game gets to be pretty interesting how that it's a very typical loop. Like, it doesn't change much, but you start to get pretty addicted to it because you just like to see the days go by earning those terrible paychecks as the government keeps adding more and more taxes to it, increasing what they take from you. But you're finding yourself continuously playing the game, especially when the little stupid vignettes pop up where the character is talking to her manager and your coworker, and you're having these like little quick conversations. Though, towards the end of the main mode game, things sort of take a bit of a shift. And suddenly Marfusha becomes a direct target of the enemy, so you're not guarding the gate, you're guarding her. And out of nowhere, the game ends. Unexpectedly, and on a very dour note.
Spoil the ending.
No, I'm not telling you the ending. In fact, I'd say the main mode, as they call it, isn't even really the main mode, because the challenge mode seems to be where the meat and potatoes of the game is.
Mm-hmm.
In the challenge mode, you are able to choose one of the 8 girls that are in the game total, i.e. your Marfusha and the coworkers, and you can go and do like a day after day after day cycle of combat, where they kind of change the rules in that you have a constant, you only have $5 coming in every day regardless of what you do. Which means now all of a sudden the choices in what you buy become a lot tougher. Also, the different girls have their own respective perks, stats, and weaknesses, which will make each run feel special for that character that you purchase and bring into the field with you. I think the game is a lot of fun in that regard. I could see it not sticking around for too long for some people, because once you start messing around with the challenge mode, he's had a particularly high score on the challenge ranking, you might just see yourself going, well, I'm done with this. But I did enjoy my time with the main mode. And I do see myself potentially going back and maybe getting one or two more endings. Because I speculate the endings are based on if you had a coworker or not, because I couldn't see any other choices that would have impacted it. But there are multiple endings, so my guess is your coworker factors in. And I would say, as a final wrap-up, because I probably talked a lot about this game, is that it's not too complex, and the game isn't even particularly punishing. If you fail a day, you can retry the day on the main mode, so they don't necessarily kick you back. However, if you somehow found yourself in a position where you just can't figure it out, like maybe you don't have enough money or what have you, you're always given the option to go back to day one and start over. But you don't have to.
Yeah. Well, the game's $12. What do you think?
I honestly think it's a buy. Even if you think the price is too much, get it on sale. But I could see myself getting $12 of fun out of this game. Just cool. Two playthroughs would give you that, really.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Next up is Figment 2 Creed Valley, developed and published by Bedtime Digital Games, released March 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Figment 2 Creed Valley is an action-adventure game set in the human mind. Nightmares are spreading chaos and have overrun once peaceful lands. Join Dusty, the mind's courage, as you make your way through puzzles, musical boss fights, and unique environments. Face your fears head on. Chris, tell us about your time with the unique Figment 2 Creed Valley.
Yeah, Figment 2. So this is a sequel. You know, if you couldn't tell by the number. But so I had never played the first game, so I can't really compare it to that. But I did some supplemental looking at and reading and stuff, and this does look like a very similar situation. So what Figment 2 is that, yeah, you are playing as Dusty, who is a hero of the mind. He is the embodiment of courage that that exists in your brain somewhere.
And Horror Acolyte is saying that is a standalone sequel, so it should be fairly standalone. I guess it's a self-contained story that is...
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right.
I'm just saying it's a sequel that, in the sense that it's like...
Yeah, yeah.
The last game is a little bit like this, too, but I don't know anything else about that. I just know it kind of looks like it and kind of plays like it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, as far as I know, yeah, this is a unique story. Actually, wait, that's the proper usage of unique, because it's unique in the of the two. Anyways, so what happens is that basically this game kind of moves along an isometric kind of like connected floating abstract islands kind of situation, a little bit like Toe Jam and Earl. So, but it's not like that. It's just presented kind of like that. But yeah, you play Dusty, who, like I said, is, you know, he's kind of a very cute sort of hard to tell what he is. He seems kind of teddy bearish almost, but he's kind of he's just a critter. He's a blue critter with a scarf and a what looks like a wooden sword, but it kind of turns into a lightsaber. So who knows? The whole the graphical presentation of this game is very like hand painted looking, very kind of matte. So it's kind of like most things are just like this big splash of color. It's not like everything is super detailed or anything, but you know, it still looks really sharp though because it's on PS5, and we'll get to this being the PS5 version in a second. So what you do is you run around these isometric connected planes, and throughout the stage, you're basically solving little puzzles in order to proceed further into the stage, perchance to meet and defeat a boss. The puzzles are, you know, they start off like, because you're going against the darkness, so you have to clear darkness. So you have to find bulbs of a certain color and put them into sockets of a certain color. The game does the clever thing of like kind of making it to where you have to like kind of juggle the limited amount of lights with the limited amount of sockets to get to a certain place, and like you kind of have to figure things out. It, you know, it's one of those things where you'll sit there and think about it for a few minutes, and then you're like, oh, okay, it's this obvious thing, and then you do the obvious thing, and then it works. And then the second stage deals with like kind of moving platforms and flicking switches around to like make things accessible, which is kind of cool. But what I like about the game is that every it definitely doesn't feel like it's just, you know, obligatory puzzle, you know, and then, you know, just from moving from place to place and like no sense of like, you know, adventure or anything like that. Like in this game, you get to kind of like meet people. Sometimes the puzzles involve like people, but in this like abstract way. Like you have a in the so the second stage, for instance, is where you're switching between open-mindedness and closed-mindedness. So when you flick a switch, the world becomes closed-minded but more functional. But then when it becomes more open, then it kind of opens up some other things that lets you move stuff around more freely. That way, when you close the mind, things are now accessible. See, it's an allegory, man. so like that's what I like about the game is that it wraps it all up in this, in the abstract, in into this like actual like story. And like, you know, for instance, there's a this crotchety like figment of the imagination, which takes the shape of like this kind of weird mushroom man of some kind. And he's complaining about the music that the neighbor is enjoying. And the neighbor is just enjoying this. It's just this dinky music. It's just like, it's nothing really. The music in this game, by the way, is really great, but we'll get to that. So you have to like change out the bulb in the neighbor's house in order to have him, you know, play, basically enjoy more boring music, and then the neighbor's at peace, and then he will let you into his scrap junkyard to pick up a piece of scrap that you need for a different puzzle. So I don't know, and it's funny how it plays out. It's just like, and the music, like, by the way, sounds almost exactly the same. So it's just like this guy complaining over nothing, but you know, once you appease him, then you know, suddenly things are friendly. Anyway. All this to say, you get through these puzzles, they're all very interesting and sometimes challenging, but then you get to the boss. The bosses are, as you would expect, like some kind of cognitive dissonance that take, you know, abstract forms. Like the darkness is this big giant darkness pig that like tries to trample you. And the thing about the bosses is that they sing at you while they attack you. It's all of the boss fights are musicals. So that is not only like, you know, just a thing for the game to have more, you know, personality and kind of lay it on you. The boss's attack patterns are usually keyed up by the music. So if you're listening to the song, then you kind of get the sense of what they're going to be doing next. And, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, combat is nothing special. Your guy Dusty swings his sword and, you can also do a roll, which makes you temporarily invincible. You know the drill. That's just how it goes now. And then, you know, the other cool thing is that Dusty is joined by Piper, who is a little bird who talks to him throughout the game and kind of gives you, like, your hints and stuff. It's a non-playable site. Well, it is playable in two-player mode. It's, but I didn't get to test that out. But yeah, I actually like their dialogue between each other, too, which is pretty nice. So yeah, like that's basically Figment. Like I said, you just go through several stages, fight several bosses, and solve many, many puzzles, and enjoy the ride.
Cool. Let's see. The game is sitting at $25. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the amount of content, that's just about right. But what is really the selling point of this game is just how artistic it is. Like it's very, very good attention paid to like crafting a world rather than just dropping you into, you know, assets with puzzles and then maybe some dialogue, you know, like you really do. You really are intrigued to keep going in this game and really keep going. So, you know, I think that this is definitely one to watch out for. I will issue a warning just based on my other, you know, on my research leading up to this review is that I reviewed the PS5 version, which runs perfectly and looks beautiful and is just, you know, functionally perfect. But apparently if you're eyeballing the Switch version, it's got some performance issues. So do make sure to weigh that against, you know, when you're looking to pick out a version of this game to play, is that the, you know, the, as the old song goes, there are performance issues on the Switch version.
Oh, well,
oh, yeah, it's a buy it if I didn't say that already.
Yeah. Just maybe be careful with the Switch.
Yeah.
Right. Next game is Eggalien, developed by Space Spy and published by Penguin Pop Games. Released April 4th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $5.99. Far into the future, after technology is developed in unimaginable ways, the humans treated Earth with violence and disrespect. They ruined what was once a beautiful place. The Earth blew up into rocks, and the only thing left was the core. After an alien named Astri hears a voice, she gains her new alien powers and is on a mission with her friend, tagging along to restore the core to what was once a great planet. Go and help save the Earth. Pernell, what is Eggalien?
I thought Jacob played this one too.
Well, you both played it, but Jacob didn't get as far. Jacob, did you figure out the game yet, or were you still having issues with it?
I'm now stuck on the second boss.
Yeah, second boss was a dick. Pernell, what do you think of Eggalien?
The whole fucking game's a dick.
I mean, the odd thing about the game is that its main gameplay mechanic is a combination of interesting but also limiting. Your character is an alien that poops eggs, and those eggs are what propels them into the sky. You have a limited amount that you can launch before you are sent back down to the ground, in which case you will need to then launch yourself back up. The eggs are both how you get around the stages and also how you attack and kill enemies in the game itself. Each level is essentially a enclosed space with your where you are tasked with killing all the enemies present in the room at the time. And you will do so by hitting them with the eggs. Every once in a while, the game will drop a weird mechanic on you as well, such as maybe TNT boxes you can blow up by hitting with eggs, enemies that will chase you when they see you, like almost like a line of sight, or they hear you, basically, and so on and so forth, or different enemy bullet patterns and the like. But the game doesn't time you or anything like that, which is fortunate, except for one particular achievement where you have to beat a boss within like a minute. But overall, you're pretty much going into a level, killing all the enemies, being told you did it by using some weird buzzword like rad or gork or something, some weird words, and then you'll plunge. Move on to the next stage. Did you say splunge?
Yeah. Props if anybody gets it.
Splunge. Splork. But then at the end of the stage, you will come across a boss. The boss will have a weird dialogue between you, or rather between you, the companion character in the game, and themselves. And then you'll have a boss battle. And the bosses are giant enemies that typically just happen to take more shots than the average goon. If you defeat them, you'll move on to the next area. The weird thing about it, there's not a lot to describe here, because the game itself is pretty simple in what it is. But I will say, the game, while it didn't particularly wow me or anything like that, I was absolutely enjoying my time with it. I was engaging and pressing forward to get to the next levels and so on and so forth. And I did go back and try to beat every boss I beat under a minute to see if that was an achievement for each of those guys, because I kind of got caught up in the idea, like, well, if I can beat them in a minute, I'm going to do it. And I know they rewarded me once, only to find out that I only got that achievement for the first boss. So yeah, whoopsie doodle.
It's one of those games where they only have a handful of achievements in the game, and you get it like halfway through the game. But I got, my 1,000.
How'd you get stuck on the second boss, Mel?
I'm sorry, what?
No, go. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna say I'm not gonna be surprised if they toss in extra achievements to like bump it up to like 2,000 in like a month or so.
Yeah, it's possible.
Is that a thing that Rattalaika tends to do?
This isn't Rattalaika. Yes.
Well, that's what I thought it was.
This is Penguin anyway. Pop. They may have go ahead, what were you saying?
I was going to say, like, maybe there's just like a new gang in town for that type of game.
There's a couple of publishers who have achievements that way, but I know Rattalaika is actually starting to distance themselves from doing that.
I'm all right with that logic. Get on with your bad selves, Rattalaika. but with this, I got to now go back to the point. How'd you get stuck on the second boss now? That's the boss. That's not the eye guy, is it? No.
No, it's just like a big, a big gooey thing that just hops around a bunch, and because
oh yeah, the hoppy's got he pops a ball every once in a while, depending on how many times you hit him. Yeah,
Jake pops a ball every now and then too.
No, I got fixed, so.
So yeah, but we could talk afterwards. But yeah, you could beat that guy. He's not too bad. Yeah, you could do it. But yeah, like it's honestly, I'll say the game. It is a decent time. But you're not going to write home about the music or anything like that. But I will say that you will get to a point where you're like, like I never found myself feeling like particularly taxed on a level. Like, how am I supposed to beat this one? So it was pretty much here's a level, beat it. Here's a level, beat it. But I was okay with the loop.
But at the same time, you're dealing with the limited bullshit, you know, shooting capabilities and jumping capabilities, and the fact that you only get one life.
Well, here's the thing about that. One, the levels are so short that you don't need more than one life, and they kick you back in pretty quickly, too. So it's more of like a get in, get out.
For the boss battles, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, it's stupid.
No, the bosses themselves. Obviously, different strokes for different folks, but since we're talking about it from a review capacity, I would say the bosses don't particularly need more than one life. It's more like you go in there, oh crap, he killed me, and you're learning what they do, and then once you're like, okay, I'm comfortable with this boss and how this boss fights.
I have yet to get below 25% on the second boss.
We'll talk. You can do it, but we'll talk about that one. But yeah, I definitely feel like the life system isn't a big deal there. And as far as the attacking thing goes, like I said, it is limiting in that, well, I could only shoot down. That is going to very much determine what my actions are going to be when I see any enemy. What are you going to do? Shoot him from your butt. Okay, what about that guy? Shoot him from my butt. Everything, shoot from the butt. But with that said, it is the game's gimmick. It's the thing that it uses to set itself apart from other games of its ilk, the whole cleared room full of enemies to move on to the next stage deal. So, I mean, it's just a matter of if a person's okay with the idea of using your propulsion system to attack enemies that lie below you. I mean, that's the game. For me, I mean, it helps that the game is pretty cheap, too. Like, if you're coming at me saying this game is $24.99, I'm like, it can stay $24 on the shelf. But if at the price point they're coming at it with, it's a good short hop with a guy that's like a little eyeball ghoul. So,
well, then, Purnell, give me a verdict. $6. What are your thoughts?
I think it's just high-end triad in that regard. It's a good quick-hit puzzle game, or puzzle action game, I'll call it. But it's not. I don't believe it's going to hold you off too much, just enough to kind of knock it out and get your money's worth and move on to the next thing. But it's an enjoyable time.
Jacob, what are your thoughts?
If you're looking for a challenge, like a purposely challenging game, which I realize like all of them are, but like, you know, like this is like we're going to limit what you can do. That's how it's challenging.
I didn't think it was challenging, so I don't know.
Well, I did.
Don't be mean to Jacob. He sucks.
I have to be mean to Jacob. It's in the job description.
Hey, I'm supporting the guy. Like I said, we'll talk afterwards. You can beat that boss. He's not that big a deal.
You could do it, Jacob. I believe in you.
Anyways, what I'm trying to say is that if you're looking for a purposely challenging game, then yeah, go for it, especially at the $6 price. Otherwise, if you're looking for a relaxing time, then this game just issues a big fuck you to you, and you're not going to have that. So, I'm not a fan of it. I'm just not.
Would you say if you're looking for a relaxing time, make it Suntory time, but not Eagling time?
What?
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
How does no one here know about the freaking that damn movie? Oh well, no big deal. What make movie? It Suntory time. That damn movie, like Lost in Translation.
Oh, I didn't see it yet.
I thought you said Santorum time, and I'm like, nah.
No, Suntory time.
I was like, yeah, I like how you're bitching about, like, oh, we have to keep this one safe for work. Like, we're about to talk about Santorum.
Are we in the kid section right now?
I don't know. Are you in the kid section?
No, you are. You're hiding there.
Game is a bikes. Solid try.
You're hiding in the bike section.
And from Jacob, it's a no dice because it's rough.
You're up on the second rack of bikes, and you don't know how to get down.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that you think I can manage to fit up there.
No, you got up there, and you don't know what you're doing.
You're just meowing at meowing at everyone, and they're gonna have to send the fire department.
You're hissing at people trying to help you down. It's like someone comes over and they put their arms and like, come here, buddy, and you're like, and they just run away, scared.
Oh my!
All right, next game to talk about is Ultra Pixel Survive, developed by Gold Skull Studios, published by Rattlehake Games. Release April 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Command heroes with unique abilities harvest natural resources to collect materials, then build and develop your military defenses. Each night, the enemy hordes will attack the village and challenge your strategic and tactical prowess to survive. Explore dark underground dungeons and wage battle against gigantic bosses. Evolve your weapons by gathering new materials and survive the epic onslaught for as long as possible. Chris, what is going on in Ultra Pixel Survive?
What's going on is a description that's going to take longer than the review.
Oh, geez.
No, it's fine. Okay, so Ultra Pixel Survive is a, I'm not going to call it unique, but I will call it an unusual side-scrolling 8-bit style survival game. So, a survival roguelike, if you wish. But what it is that you basically start up the game. You pick your character. All the characters but one is locked away. Your character starts at level 1, and you get dumped into the world. There's one house, and if you go in either direction, you can just keep going until you die, because that's going to happen. So I'm sure that the world has an end, but you know, I haven't leveled up enough to see it. But basically, you walk left and right. You can jump, you can slash with your sword. You can use the shoulder button to select a axe or a pickaxe. And you can basically farm the environment for different, materials that you can then, with the right shoulder button, select a forge to create a new item or improve an existing item. All of this is basic. So basically what it is that by day, you are collecting like as many things as you can. You can go into little caves, and yeah, like they say, there's bosses, but you know, you're gonna work up the bosses. This is not, you know. But yeah, you basically gather up those materials, and there's a timer, a day night cycle. You can actually watch the sun in the sky too, which is kind of great. Like, you have a clock, but you can also just tell like that the day is turning into night, which I like a lot. Because remember, this is like 8-bit pixelization like stuff. So, you know, it's fancier than 8-bit, but it looks, the presentation is modern 8-bit, as you would call it. Once the night falls, enemies start coming out like crazy time. So you are then suddenly, in survival mode. You could go and hide in that one house that you saw, but the time's not going to move while you're in there. That's just a place where you can save your game and have a lady, presumably your mom, just like give you some, you know, tip that will seem decreasingly helpful as you continue to lose health and energy and, you know, very quickly move towards death. And then, you know, and the mom's like, make sure to gather materials. Yeah, anyways. So there's different things you can do to mitigate this. You can, on top of crafting and improving, like, weapons and stuff that you have, and you can actually build your stats this way, too. You can also build traps. So you can lay down, like, spikes on the ground and stuff. Enemies will walk over them and take damage. You can build walls, you can build a campfire, which, you know, doesn't keep you safer, but it does allow you to cook food, although on a timer. If you happen to gather up enough material to make, like, a stove, then you can actually, you know, cook food, and when you cook food, then it will heal you. Of course, you have to kill animals to get food, or pick berries by chopping them down with a sword, because that's how agriculture works. And yeah, basically it's a cycle of like trying to survive the night, which are way worse than the days, by just like grabbing as much stuff as you can. And as you defeat enemies, you gain levels. As you defeat enemies, you get gold. If your character dies, all you keep is the gold. There's also a permadeath option, which I turned off. So I don't even know what it does. Maybe it just locks away that class. I don't know. But anyway, I think what it, I don't know if what it does, but basically, yeah, when you die, you keep your gold. You can then dump that gold in the menu into either your adventurer and have them start off on a higher level. There's like an extrinsic level, which is the level that you spend money to gain, and you always have that. And then there's the intrinsic level, which is once you're in the game, you start gaining levels, starting with the level you start with, you know? And then, like I said, as it moves on, you get to unlock more things. You get to unlock the Fire Witch, the Ice Witch, the Ninja, a Valkyrie, you know, all kinds of different characters and stuff. And each of them have different strengths when it comes to farming and attacking. And yeah, you kind of eventually, through many playthroughs, get to the character that you want, improve them a lot, and then survive more and more and more. And yeah, every, you know, like every however many days, they will drop a boss on your ass and you have to defeat it. So, you know, your survival really does have a pretty hard limit until you start to really get strong. But the gameplay loop is very addictive, so you are going to keep getting in there and keep, you know, fighting and collecting. And, you know, it's, you know, it was originally developed for Android, so, you know, it's a mobile game at heart, and it very much, you know, has that, you know, it'll keep you going kind of thing, but without, you know, the pesky, you know, pay to win type situations. I don't know that the original game has that, but, you know, it's one of those that feels like it could have.
Yeah.
So, well, anyway.
It's a $5 game. What do you think?
I like it a lot. And in fact, I will be buying it myself when it comes out on Switch very soon. So yeah, this is a winner for sure. I didn't think I would like it as much as I do, but it's so tight and like, everything is so, like, you know, it moves fast and, like, it doesn't have any fuss to it. It's very trim. So I really appreciate that about it. And so I will be giving them $5 summarily.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Terrascape, developed by Bitfall Studios, published by Toplitz Productions, released April 5th on Steam for $12.99. In Terrascape, you build your own dream city. Each pack of cards in Terrascape offers different buildings and ways to expand your kingdom. Place your cards wisely in the game world to earn points and receive new cards as rewards. We said the word cards, which means Pernell's involved. Permel.
Permel sounds like a really delicious.
Yeah, I can't talk. Like, I've given up on talking tonight. So,
Permel chili.
Permel chili. Oh my god.
I try.
All right, Permel. What is Terrascape?
This game is devoid of Permel chili, but
there's no chili in the game.
Not a lick of chili. But what there is in the game is a decent bit of good fun. In fact, I'm looking forward to what more they do with it because it's an early friggin' access. But what it is it's a city-building game, but it adds a bit of a puzzle element by attributing points to that old adage concept of those old puzzles you used to get in grade school where it was Becky likes sitting next to Jim, but Jim doesn't particularly like sitting next to Becky. Becky is also fond of purple desks, you know, the logic puzzles where you're trying to figure out the proper seating for all the kids in the classroom or some variation of that. But in the case of this game, you tie that to different landmarks and building types. And the buildings score you points when you place them onto these maps. But the score that you get for the building is completely dependent on what places you have around it when you place it and also the tile type that you place it on top of. And that is the main crux of what the game is. And this is done between two modes. The main mode, to me anyway, because it's my favorite mode, is the puzzle mode. And in puzzle mode, you go to a series of different stages where the game will task you with a specific number of card types. And I'll explain more about what makes the cards special in a minute. But just know for now that the cards are represent different building types and terrain or like placement item types. But the game will say, hey, for this level, you have 6 cottages, and you need to place them in such a way that you will score 300 points, which is the score required to get the gold medal for that stage. So you'll be placing your tiles around, trying to get a good combo. Now, the idea at the most base level of the game is that if you know that a card type will get more points by being placed next to a card that's just like it, so now, obviously, what you'll probably do is place multiple tiles of that type around, like in a circle, and then place one more in the center. to get like a maximum point bonus for like all the tiles surrounding the one you placed last. So you'll be using, you know, different buildings that you place, the different terrain like forests and trees and whatnot to get high scores on these cards. You're able to destroy cards sometimes too, in order, or things you place on the board in order to get like a better score based off of it. Because once you've placed an item one time, nothing you do will affect the score that originally gave you. So if you got a really good chain from one card and you start destroying the forest around the lumberjack hut because, well, you need it for other stuff, well, guess what? It doesn't matter because you already got the points you needed from the first placement. So that's the general idea behind the game. But obviously, if that was all the game was, it would be pretty bland. So what makes this game particularly special or unique? Well, it's pretty straightforward here. The points you get are also tied to a card system. Whenever you place a card, being a building or a facility, you'll get points based on how you placed it. Once you meet a certain point threshold, you'll gain access to the ability to draw from a pile of card decks that you can choose from. For example, I hit 40 points. That allows me to choose a new deck of cards from a new deck of cards. That becomes either forestry deck or the village deck. And these types of decks represent what buildings will come out of it, or types of buildings can come out of it. You select one of those, and now you'll get one or two or three different cards representative of that category. And then you'll be placing those to try to get more points to get more cards. As you place more of these different objects, you'll also be unlocking new card types that can be drawn from those card packs. So, for example, forestry, you might say if you can get 180 points off of forestry cards, you'll gain access to a new card, such as the stables or something, which you can then place for this own placement condition to get more points. So you'll be unlocking those new buildings in the packs, and as you place enough buildings, you can even upgrade your main starting building, which is called a keep, which will allow you to get new pack types of cards, which means now you're going to get new packs of cards, which has their own cards, which you'll be upgrading as well. And then, because there's freaking more, you can also set the buildings up in certain combinations and placement settings to unlock super buildings. So let's say an easy example, the cottage. A cottage is a card type. I can tell you right now because I ain't write this down. I'm not as professional as Brooke. She's freaking good at this stuff. I didn't write this stuff down.
I don't write stuff down either.
But what I do is keep references on the screen when I need to read stuff because I'm that kind of guy.
You said
do. So, for example, the cottage, if you place it next to a keep, which is your starting tile, you get 6 points. Or a square, you get 6 points. But if you place it on grass, you'll also get 2 points. And there's no negative bonuses for placing it next to a place it doesn't want to be near. So pretty freaking sweet. Also, depending on the type of building, that bonus can extend out beyond the range of one. So you might get a building that will get benefits from any tile, any building on within two tiles of it. So you can get some crazy mess going on in this game. But you can place those cottages next to each other to get bonuses from the adjacent cottages. And then if you happen to place them in, like I say, a plus formation, one up, one down, then one left and one right, you'll transform it into what's called a longhouse. The longhouse can provide bonuses to adjacent buildings as well, but you'll also unlock a special card that comes from it. In this case, a bomb, unless you blow up a tile you don't want to have placed anymore. So you'll be doing crazy stuff like this, trying to ultimately maintain and just like get just really cool building combinations. And you'll be doing that sometimes in the puzzle mode if the level requires it. But once you're done and you're tired of the puzzle game, the main game, as other people would do, not for me personally, is a sort of randomization mode where you can go in and choose a type of map and like a biome for that map. And the game will randomly generate a map for you to play on. And you'll be doing the same thing I described, being place your main building being the keep, and then building stuff out and around the board to get points. And also unlocking new packs to get new cards. But herein lies the rub. In this mode, even though there is a general score you're shooting for to get a bronze, silver, or gold status, if you get to a point where you have no more cards to place, and you haven't unlocked a new pack of cards that you can draw from to get more cards, the game is over, and that's how they determine your final score. So, you will be spending time in this game just kind of placing buildings, fulfilling, you know, conditions to score new card packs and new card types, building large buildings by way of merging them to get special one-off use items, and just kind of going at it with this. And the thing I like about this, though, primarily, is that it is unexpectedly puzzly. Early on, you'll find yourself going, oh boy, I can place this cottage next to a cottage next to a cottage, and I can place this orchard next to this orchard next to this orchard next to this orchard next to this river next to this lake. But eventually, you'll come to a point where you're like, okay, I got to maximize my scores here. I can't just keep willy-nilly placing this stuff. And that's when you're going to start questioning what you should start destroying, what you should build over top of, when you should just build something in the middle of nowhere with the expectation you're going to place something later to go next to it to get a better bonus. You're going to be running through a lot of decision-making in this very relaxing game. And I say relaxing because there's no clock ticking while you play it. You can take all the time you want, unless you're on a Steam Deck and your battery's going bad, to choose your moves to at your own leisure. I like it for that aspect quite a bit. I like the fact that I can come in here and just kind of shift from just cozy city builder to puzzly, go for the highest score city builder. And then the puzzles elements make it even cooler, because now they're doing that thing where it's like, okay, you have this many buildings specifically, you have this specific landscape. Place them in a way that you'll get the most points to meet the threshold goal, showing that you've mastered the concepts behind this game. This is an unexpected surprise of a title, and easily my pick of the week. It may well be my pick of the last 3 weeks. I think it helps also that I'm a board game guy, and this is totally board game-esque in that sense. I could totally see myself playing a tabletop version of this, though it'd be very cumbersome because you have to move parts off and stuff. But this game sits well with me. This is a game that I would have been comfortable paying money for on my own pocket, let alone having it given to me for free to talk, you know, wax wonderful on a podcast about it. So,
well, in that the game right now is $12.99. They do plan on increasing the price as it goes through early access. So, same question I asked Tim: is this something that people should get in on now? Should they wish list it? Keep it on their radar? What do you think of this one?
I'd buy it right the heck now. It does enough to justify the $12.99 price. And you're telling me I'm going to get more that's going to ultimately eventually command a higher price? This is an easy like. This is a good game.
Cool.
I would say the only complaint I could have, and this is a dinky doodle small one, is that some people might say the text is too small. But the text is readable, but I'm also playing on a Steam Deck. I don't know what it would be like on a giant monitor on a TV, but on the Steam Deck, it's readable, but the text is smaller than I would like, but it's not too small that I'm like squinting or whatever.
Cool. All right. That is it for the normal reviews tonight. It is now time to keep things clean, because it is time for SML Kids Corner. I don't know what to call it. Does
have a Kids Corner now?
Huh?
Yes. I was like, yes, we've got a Kids Corner now.
Yeah, which means we all have to keep the language clean.
Let's call it the ball pit.
The ball pit?
Sold.
SML ball pit. We are ready to jump in the ball pit and pelt each other with plastic goodness that will leave welts and bruising. But, kids, so we'll get better. first game to talk about in our kids lineup is Bratz Find Your Fashion, developed by Patoon Studio, published by Outright Games. This one released back in November on all platforms for $39.99. Brooke, tell us about your time with Bratz Find Your Fashion.
All right. Do y'all remember how I opened up my first review, where I was like, yo, if you ever played a game like
this? I remember, like, back in the day.
It was just like it was yesterday. Well, keep that in mind, because I'm going to ask if you've ever played a game like Skyrim or Pokemon Arceus or like Pokemon App or something, and you were like, dang, I really like this game, but I wish I could run around in this world and explore and talk to people with a big old glowing exclamation mark on top of their heads who would give me quests. Go tell me to gather three of some type of thing, bring it back to them, and unlock places on the map I could fast travel to later. Have you ever played one of those games like Skyrim like that, and you were like, yeah, I want to do all this stuff, but I just don't want to do any of the fighting. I just want to walk around. Well, if you have, Purnell, there's a chance that Bratz Flaunt Your Fashion might be a game that you would enjoy. But it's not just like Skyrim, man. There's a key difference between Skyrim in this game. Hold on, Joe, I'm trying to pull up this audio clip.
Is it a bratty difference?
It's gonna be good. It's actually the opposite of bratty difference. Come on, Brooke. Pull it up.
I believe the answer is 42. I will say, while you are pulling up, I have to say that I am amazed that the Bratz property is getting some love again.
Yo, and it is, dude, this is blowing my mind. How are we back at Bratz, dude?
I don't even know. That was one of the main products we used to sell when I worked at the toy store back in like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah,
like,
that's crazy.
Freaking Bratz.
I didn't even know that there was a TV show until this game opened up with this jam and song.
Wait, it had a TV show too?
And yeah. A movie.
You guys didn't know that?
No. It was enough to sell the toys.
It wasn't meant for us.
Hold up. I'm not knocking it. I mean, you gotta understand, like, working in the toy line stuff, there was a lot of junk that wasn't meant for us that still came across the pike. Like, they sell what now? This toy is popular?
Nice. Like,
yeah, Bratz hit that. At least when it came out, I assume it still does. But it hits that market of girls who are ready to leave Barbie, but still want to kind of play with dolls as they move into teenage years.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I had something kind of prepared to talk about that. Like, I was trying to be over here playing the theme song, but the theme song just says, "Ooh, Bratz, we'll always be there for each other."
No, is the mic not picking it up? It's all about
friendship.
Isn't it from the toy ads, "Ooh, dude, Bratz," like that thing?
Yeah, it's that song, and that just didn't really come through on my phone, I guess. But yeah, that's the main difference between Bratz and Skyrim is that you gotta always be there for each other, and this is about friendship, man. You gotta think about your friends, man.
I like Chris's proud chuckle that you found a way to link Bratz and Skyrim.
That's perfect.
It's going to come together better. It's like whenever we compare something to Skyrim like that, it's always for Chris. I love it. But anyway, keeping this in mind, I'd like to introduce this game as a period piece set in the ancient bygone era of the early 90s. But before we talk about 90s, what are Bratz? It is like Jacob said, Bratz were the popular, for kids, yet very sexualized non-Barbie dolls of folks who like that sort of thing growing up in the 90s. Compared to Barbie, Bratz had a few key differences, keeping this family-friendly for the kids portion of the show. They all have a lot of junk in the trunk, if you will, and they have very wide hips, too, like ridiculously big hips, so kind of the anti-Barbie thing going on. So it actually makes sense for them to have that much, and if you happen to know me in person, you've ever met me IRL, you'll know that I really appreciate this representation of real women. They've also got attitude. They all look pretty angry in like a sexy pouty way. Somewhat, this is because of the way that we used our makeup back then in the early 90s. There was excessive use of lip liner, and we plucked our eyebrows and we redrew them on frequently, which was very, very real in the 90s. A lot of us that came up during that time are still recovering eyebrow wise. Y'all can't see this, but I'm drawing a cross over my chest and like kissing my rosary right now, hoping that my eyebrows will come back someday. No matter how you felt about Bratz when we were kids, you gotta hand it to them. They were beacons of representation of the styles at the time. And the fact that not every little girl who grew up in America in the early 90s was white. You know, we had like key different dolls. We had dolls in the commercials and the shows that were different than just like, you know, it's not like 4 out of 5 of them are white girls, then we have one Asian girl. There was a good distribution here, especially for the time we were coming into. This game, you get to play as your choice of one of the girls, and whether or not you pick that girl to play in, that girl's still in your party. An array of characters who are all completely fleshed out, have their own backstories, and any cultural differences between them aren't just a nod to some character creator trying to be inclusive and throw in a couple more colors in there. All these girls have families, backstories. But yeah, so we set the stage here for our period piece with hip hugger bell-bottom jeans, which were coming back in the 90s, giant platforms, another 70s thing that was coming back in the 90s, hardcore, very 90s hair and makeup, headbands were big, Limited 2 was big, Claire's. It's strange for me because this game is... it's definitely for kids, and it's not an adult game. And it's not like a game for kids that some adults can enjoy. Like, it's not a kid's game in a winky way, like some of the coming-of-age anime Otome games I play, where like adult women might still enjoy it as a guilty pleasure. For example, popular Otome game, Collar Malice. This is a game, it's got a lot going on. We got gorgeous locations to travel to. We've got the mall, the park, the Bratz apartments, or wherever, where we all live. The mall is huge in this game. Like, when I walk around the mall, was when I leaned over in my notes and wrote, compare to Skyrim if Chris is on the show. Like, this mall is a freaking big area.
You can only shop in, like, three different areas, though, in the mall.
And it's very, you know, I'm glad you bring that up because it brings me back to how I feel when I was a kid in the mall. There's all this space to walk around and it seems like the possibilities are endless. But, what you know, we don't really have any money or anything to do in the mall. So we're just walking around over and over again. I really shouldn't compare this game to Skyrim in seriousness because it's not that big. It's just a lot bigger than what I thought it would be.
There's also no dragons.
Yo, not yet. Maybe you haven't played enough yet. Nah, I don't think there's dragons.
You're taking an arrow to the knee, right?
Yeah. It's hard to see the whole mall on foot. You might want to rent a scooter from the scooter rental guy. They're all different colors. Some of the scooters can be customized. It's pretty cool. You start on this game in the apartments where you and the other brats live. The others show you how to walk around, how to use your smartphone and map, how to take a selfie using your phone. That's a big part of this game. Taking a selfie is making sure both the characters are in the picture and hitting X to take the picture. This opens a little mini game, not unlike how you shoot bad guys as a cop in popular Otome game Caller Malice. A circle starts in the middle of the screen and slowly becomes bigger to expand out to the edge of the screen, while the circle overlaps and becomes the same as the other stationary circle already on the screen, exactly like in Caller Malice. When you're killing someone with a gun, you hit the button. The minigame is called Focusing the Camera. So it's almost like kind of got a rhythm game thing going on, but not really a song you tap out to. You just kind of want to hit the button at the right moment. The last thing your peeps are going to tell you in the apartments where y'all live is why you're all here and what you care about. You all are the Bratz Pack, and you're not just the styling cute little ladies. You're also in a rock band together. You also are fashion reporters, whatever that is, forever on the hunt for your next big scoop. And your next big scoop this time around for the tutorial happens to be interviewing Marco Beretti. He is the famous Italian fashion designer of this game universe. You and your ladies, you roll up to the mall, and you're about to interview him, but hey, there's a problem. Marco has lost his puppy because he wasn't paying attention to the puppy when he saw the perfect pair of jeans. Curse his incredible eye for fashion. So you gotta go around. Hopefully by now you've rented a scooter for walking around the mall, and you're looking for Marco's dog. On your way to find the dog, you're encouraged to talk to anyone you want to talk to. Most people are just NPCs that are staying in the same place and only say one sentence apiece. It's a lot like in Pokemon when you're exploring a new town. Talk to enough NPCs before you find the dog, and you might learn that Marco Beretti is rumored to be basing his next fashion line after the inspiration that he finds in the fashion of Italian rock bands. Once you find the dog and the plot advances, now we're interviewing Marco. If we found the NPC that gave us that rumor, and you're going to find them because it's the tutorial this time, we can ask him about that. He'll go, oh yeah, yeah, you really did your research. That's right, I love Italian rock bands. They look cool. Awesome. Now you've completed the interview. Time to take a selfie with you and your subject. You get in front of Marco. You kind of line up the camera with your smartphone. And you take the picture using the minigame. Now we get to see something we didn't really have in the early 90s. Desktop computers connected to the internet that 10, 11-year-old kids are allowed to blog and be on the internet on. And that's where you post your fashion article that you did the interview. And this is pretty much the game. You go through the world, you get quests, you interview folks, you take selfies. You can even come across purple treasure chests and areas you can explore that have a little bit of an open world thing going on, like the mall. You might open that treasure chest and it gives you money to buy new makeup and clothes with, maybe like a makeup item or a new jacket. So yeah, basically this game is Skyrim.
Cool. Jacob, did you have any thoughts on it?
I mean, I already reviewed this game
long time ago, but
yeah, like a few months ago, but like, I mean, Brooke pretty much covered it. It's a kid's game that has a surprising amount of depth for it. There were some areas I found like that I thought it was a little disappointing. Like, you know, essentially the malls are like, there's only like three things to do in it. Or that like some of the areas, it's just, you can see them, and they've obviously populated with people to make it look busy, but it looks way cooler than where you're allowed to be. But I don't know. I just, as I said, like in my previous review, like it as I said, it has a surprising amount of depth. And honestly, if your family doesn't really buy a lot of kids' games, this one's honestly worth checking out. Like, yeah. I had a good time through, like, I had a decent, I don't want to say, like, good time as in, like, oh, man, this is the best game ever, the game of the year. I mean, because we all know that that's Peppa Pig. But but you know, it's this was fine. Like, there was never a moment where I'm like, what the heck did they do with this? Like, you know, this is the worst Bratz game of all time. Like, I never found any errors with it. I never, you know, I never had any problems playing the game. It was relaxing. Like, cool. Well, it takes like, I think about 4 hours total to blow through it if you're doing everything at a, like a breakneck pace. But yeah, and it's also an easy 1,000 if you're an achievement hunter.
Yeah, nice. Well, the game is normally $40. I believe it is on sale on all platforms for $20 right now. I know it's on Switch and Xbox. I didn't get to check PlayStation, but I know Outright is going crazy with their sales right now. So at $40 or at $20, what are your thoughts?
I think keeping in mind that this is a kid's game and it's not like, you know, like I talked about a little bit earlier, it's not like a coming of age game for young girls that's also marketed toward adult women so they can find something from it too. Like, this is definitely for kids. I feel like you're not going to want to get this for your kid unless she's like, unless he or she is like middle school or younger. So it does feel like it's aimed at a really young group. Keeping that in mind, like, I think they totally understood the assignment that they gave themselves. Like, it feels like a kid's game. It feels like a good kid's game. I agree with everything Jacob said, that while, like, it's not the deepest game in the world, it was way deeper than I thought this title was going to be. Like, this had a lot more content than I expected. And I remember being this age playing fashion games, like, when I was at the age that this game is kind of shooting for. I want to say this feels like 10, 11 years old. There were fashion games like this that you could play on PC that you could get, like, a CD-ROM for, and, like, this...
CD-ROM? What is that thing?
Oh.
It's a nice poster.
Oh, a coaster.
It's a nice coaster for your drink. I remember playing games like this. Like, we've come a long way for games for little girls, and, you know, that has that sort of, like, girl power fashion vibe to it. I think this game would have delighted me a lot if I'd come across it at the right age. I think it would have given me a lot of gameplay for my money. And, like, I don't think games have increased in price a whole heck of a lot since back then. So, honestly, even though this isn't something I'd seek out as an adult woman, and I don't think like Chris Taylor or Pernell of all people would really enjoy this title. Like, I think if we keep in mind who it's for, it's absolutely worth the money.
Cool. Well, you sold me on it enough by comparing it to Skyrim and what was it, Collar Malice as well?
Yeah,
which, you know, by the way, kids, do not look up that game.
Yeah, don't look up either of those games.
Don't look up Collar Malice. That's not a good one to look up for. Wait a couple of years on that one.
But it has the exact same minigame, and I just find that to be very interesting.
That's amazing.
You know what I would like to say about it before we stop talking about Bratz? One of the things I thought was, you know, even as if you watched any of my Twitch streams of it, like, I regularly made fun of the plot. Like, as it was happening, because, you know, the events are fairly ludicrous, you know, a lot of amazingly enough stuff happens, and of like, oh, well, of course they're fashion reporters, and of course, you know, they're photographers, and of course they're in a dance crew, and of course they're also extreme sports, you know, enthusiasts. You know, I mean, it kind of goes along with, like, the Barbie, like, you can be anything that you want, but yeah. At the same time, like, never at any point during this game do any of, like, the main characters, whether it's the boys or girls, do they ever, like, put anybody down? Like, if somebody makes a mistake on something, like, you know, it's just like, okay, how can we fix this? Like, there was a surprisingly, like, good amount of, like, decent messages for kids in this. Like, again, I wasn't expecting it from a licensed game.
Yeah.
Like this, and so it was nice as a parent to, like, see that in the game.
I feel nice. The same way, even not being a parent. I was like, this game gives me, it's like kind of a little bit of weird hope going on, so I'd love to see it.
All right, well, moving on, next kid's game is Gigantosaurus Dino Kart, developed by 3D Clouds, published by Outright Games. This one released back in February on all platforms for $39.99. Chris, tell us about your time with Gigantosaurus Dino Kart.
All right. Well, this is also a game that tells kids that you can be whatever you want, as long as what you want to be is a dinosaur riding a go-kart.
Sold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's already me, so, you know, totally fine. Okay, so yes, Gigantosaurus cart, whatever, is based on a TV series, a CGI, kind of a preschool show starring dinosaurs that was made in France, showing that, you know, France has improved a lot in their animation skills since the Donkey Kong Country cartoon, which was also made in France. I just had to point that out. Crystal Coconuts, do look it up, kids. See what we had to deal with.
I was not expecting that kind of a reference in this review.
You don't know Chris Taylor, then. You need to hang out on Tuesdays more.
I know.
I will always drop a reference to the Donkey Kong Country cartoon. I'll break out in that pirate song if I need to.
That's quotable. That's quotable.
That's quotable. Anyway, so this is a current gen kart racer that stars a bunch of dinosaurs. It basically, so what I understand about the show is that it doesn't really have much of a plot. So this doesn't really follow much of a plot either. This is basically the, sorry, I had to look up the character names because I'm bad and I closed my tab. The story here is that, you know, you've got a bunch of juvenile, you know, very young dinosaurs. And one of them, Mazu, is an ankylosaurus who's kind of like the Donatello, you know, of the group. You know, he does machines. And, you know, basically decided one day to just build a whole bunch of working vehicles with engines and everything and distribute them amongst his friends so that they could explore their prehistoric world and come up with the best racing tracks, essentially, with what was available in nature. And the other character, Rocky, who I don't know, it's a very one-note character. Like, it's a kid that's all about competition and stuff like that. Anyway, Dinotello, thank you, Thimber. I love it. All right. You know, he's into the idea, too. The thing about the game, there's six selectable... No, there's... no, it's actually more like eight. There's a lot. There's an amount of selectable dinosaurs, depending on how many you have unlocked. That are all, you know, characters from the show. However, all of the dialogue in the adventure mode, which is the story mode, essentially, is just between Mazu and Rocky. So, you know, if you picked a different character, you basically get to watch other characters talk about, you know, racing and stuff. That's like the only... that's like just the one area where I was like, well, they could have maybe added some story with the other dinosaurs, right? But anyways, so you... in adventure mode, which is kind of your primary mode, you select one of three circuits and race through five courses in each circuit. And this is this game is extremely Mario Kart. I mean, it really, I mean, they do not deviate from the system at all. It is racing around a course that branches off sometimes. You know, they have ramps that speed you up. That's actually a little bit more F-Zero-like, but anyway, they also leave things on the ground that become power-ups that you can then use either against the other racers or to, you know, protect yourself. There's a shield, there's a boulder thing that you can shoot that's basically the turtle shell. Thankfully, there's no equivalent to a blue shell. And in fact, you know, this game is meant for the young, the very young audience, so there's not a lot of Mario Kart trickery to really frustrate you.
The AI is very forgiving in this game.
The AI is forgiving. There's three difficulty levels, and the easy difficulty is exactly that. There's no place to fall off of the course. It's always walls. There's an auto-steering option for you if you want it, an auto-accelerating one as well. There's all kinds of stuff to keep kids from being, you know, frustrated with having to learn how to do a racing game. The items, like I said, they're not annoying. Like, one is kind of like a bomb, one of them's kind of like a turtle shell, one of them's a shield. And the other thing is that the game has drifting, like in Mario Kart. If you hold down one of the shoulder buttons, then your character, you know, sparks will come out of your cart, essentially, and then you get a nice little boost. The thing is, this specifically took a page from Mario Kart DS and made it way too easy to get a boost. So you can essentially snake your way through the entire game. And snaking is something we used to call when you would play Mario Kart DS and you would just sit there and
drift back and forth
in a straight line. Yeah, because you could go in a straight line back and forth and just keep boosting in a straight line. And it's how all of the cheaters in Japan, like, you know, became like the top players in the world.
And there were plenty of cheaters in America too.
I know, but like that's a callback to people who played the DS online back before there was an online DS, right? It's that most of the players were Japanese, so, and they were all way good. So yeah, I learned my snaking, and I actually got good enough to even, you know, beat a lot of them. So anyway, that's a long time ago. In this game here and now, like I said, if you win a circuit, then you unlock another dinosaur buddy. So there's three unlockable dinosaurs, and I guess there's four initially. So I guess there's seven characters in here. I don't know. Of course, the last one to unlock is the character just known as T-Rex, which is a T-Rex, and that's the one I wanted the most. So I was like, of course, this is going to be the last one. And knowing nothing about the cartoon, I don't know whether that was a good choice, but I definitely did a few more victory laps of that T-Rex once I unlocked him.
Nice.
Would you like to know a secret?
Sure.
Outright confirmed for us that it doesn't matter who you choose.
Right, yeah.
Okay, all right.
There's no difference.
Okay, I wasn't sure that if you like that you were aware, like, or if you had played enough that you were aware.
I did play enough. I played with all the characters. They're all the same. There's no difference between them. But one of them is a T-Rex. So don't know if you heard me there, but that's the one I wanted.
Yeah,
it's pretty exciting. I know.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, it's just a fun, colorful little kart game. Not very challenging. Not like you know, it's not gonna super wow you, but it's a great, really fast moving, and you know, never like dips in the frame rate for on PS5. Of course, it's a performance machine. So like, yeah, this game handled and ran perfectly, which I always, that's the one genre I do kind of demand performance from a console on, is racing games, because yeah, it is a bummer when they start to slow down. So yeah, I was impressed with this one.
Jacob, what are your thoughts?
I mean, again, I've already reviewed this one.
Yeah, I'm just asking for quick thoughts. Just chime in.
I don't know. I mean, gameplay, it's standard kart stuff. What I was more impressed by was like the actual design of like the locations and stuff like that. I thought the courses looked really beautiful. And I really liked how you could have either Gigantosaurus or another one of the large dinosaurs. Occasionally, like, they'd be stomping across the track, and it does make a difference. Like, it does slow you down if you get hit by them. Yeah, I don't know. It was a fun kart game. Like, between this and Paw Patrol, Outright has a pretty decent lineup of, you know, the kart-based racers for their licensed properties.
Yeah.
I also wanted to... I did want to add in one little complaint.
Okay.
So... if you want to pause the game, like, for instance, if your cat is like climbing all over you and you're not able to, and you're like, okay, I got to handle this, and then, you know, get back to the game. The pause button on a PlayStation 5 controller is situated exactly between the triangle button and the large, like, touchpad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And both of those buttons, without being able to be changed, function as the reset your cart function. Like, yep, basically calling Lakitu in a Mario Kart game. And so it makes you stop completely and lose progress. And so every single time I tried to pause this game, I hit one of those two other buttons as well and ended up resetting my place in the race. And that is so annoying.
So, fun fact about that whole, like, you know, issues with button placement on the controllers. If you go into the Outright Discord, this is actually how I got the nickname Mr. Sausage Fingers. Because I had asked, you know, like, hey, could we introduce, you know, like, mappable buttons for everything? Because I think the gas and the shoot button are very far... Like, it just doesn't work out for somebody with hands my size. It's been a while, so I don't exactly remember what the setup is. But for somebody with my size, like, I couldn't do it. And so, yeah, And so I was just like, oh, you know, my sausage fingers are keep getting in the way. And then that stuck. So.
All right. Well, it's $40. What do you two think?
Great for kids if you are, you know, if for some reason you don't have Mario Kart, but if you do have Mario Kart, you want more.
I was going to say, I mean, if you're on an Xbox and you automatically don't have Mario Kart,
PlayStation.
Personally, I think it's a good kart game for kids, especially those of, you know, in the houses that don't have a Nintendo system. You know, if you're an adult, maybe wait for a sale, because, I mean, obviously you should be playing Mario Kart to begin with. But this one isn't terrible either, although you're going to get weird looks from your friends.
I was going to say, yeah, it's hard to imagine a scenario in which an adult in a household without a Nintendo is going to be like, well, I have an Xbox and a PS5, and I need a racing game right now. Oh, Gigantosaurus kart racing. All right, here we go.
You never know. I mean, maybe pour in a storm during a sale.
Yeah. Speaking of sale, it's presently $34 on the Switch and $30 on Xbox. So there you go.
Nice. Well, as a kid's game, based on that, I say buy it.
Cool. One final game to talk about tonight, My Little Pony, a Maritime Bay Adventure developed by Melbot Studios, published by Outright Games, released May 2022 on all platforms for $39.99. Brooke, tell us about your time with My Little Pony, a Maritime Bay Adventure.
Hey, just going to give a couple quick notes here before I pop off. I understand you guys covered this last Thursday night. So let me just scroll down to my notes. Okay, so I know y'all mostly covered this one last week. I'm not going to describe the premise or gameplay or anything. I did want to mention, I was going to, just to tie in my three reviews together, if you want to remember how I started my first and my second game reviews of the night. I just wanted to say, for this game, have you ever been playing a game like League of Legends and you were like, wow, I love how I can kind of explore a little bit of this lush world, only when I try to go off the road or my little trail, I find that like I'm really just stuck in a few lanes and I'm not really exploring an open world, but I'm kind of going along a track, like in League of Legends. If you've ever been playing a game like that and you were like, man, I really love this, but I just don't want to do the fighting, this, my friend, might be a game that you would enjoy. No, I'm just playing. I mostly wanted to remind everybody that if you've listened to my reviews at all on the show, you know one thing about me never changes. This is that I get lost in almost every single tutorial and need extra help to learn things. I often play tutorials twice through because once just isn't enough for my brain. I dislike it when games don't let me play through the tutorial twice more than once because they just have too much faith in me. I'm happy to report that in My Little Pony, a Maritime Adventure, I finally found a game that babies me enough in that department. That is probably because this game is a little bit for babies. It's for young children, which I don't mind. I think this is a great game for that age bracket. I played a fair amount of this. I think we can definitely call this an accessible title. I think even young kids, like maybe coming out of toddler age, could probably get comfortable playing this game. Like there's often only one button to press at a time other than the D-pad or like a joystick. I understand this came out for PC first. I played it on PS4. My feelings playing this game, I'm going to share that I actually babysat a little brony for years. He was obsessed with My Little Pony. He loved that show.
You knew Jacob before the show?
Aw, and he was so cute. Look at that face. But yeah, like I got hype with this kid for My Little Pony. I made him like some little pony sculptures with polymer clay. We did like some perler beads stuff. When I think about what he loved about that show and the vibe, I think that this is a good game. This isn't a super complicated game at all. It's not a super long game, but I think it understands the assignment it gave itself really well. I think it delivers. It gives kids or folks who would enjoy this type of game a really colorful world to explore, full of cute mini games. Most importantly, friendship and magic, and a cute little plot that's going to make them feel engaged and make them feel good. If you like the MLP world, I think that's really all you need to be able to enjoy this game, and it's not going to disappoint you. It also has rabbits in it, and they're pretty cute, so I'm going to give it a buy it. I know that Aki mentioned she like 100%ed this pretty quick.
It took me a night. It took me like 2-3 hours.
When I play games like this or Bratz, like I think I think about how much I love to pick up a really colorful game that let me explore when I was that age. I think of stuff, even though I didn't play it growing up, I think of stuff like Mario Galaxy, where like, I think a big part of the gameplay and enjoyment is just like the colors and the arcade style noises and just whether it's smoothly done and ported to whatever it's on. I thought this worked super smooth on PlayStation. I thought, you know, it's clearly got some very expensive assets for a kid's game. And I think that this is aimed at a younger crowd than Bratz substantially. Like, I think I don't know how Jacob would feel having played both, but like Bratz feels like an older game than this.
It
game.
Is. Yeah, it definitely is.
Taking that into account, like, I think this is a buy it just because it's a very pretty, smooth game. Like, I don't know.
I thought you considered it a buy it because there's a bunny in it.
And that too. There's actually a lot of bunnies. You can run around and do a little race with them. And I love how they draw the bunnies. They're just like one fat little egg with two ears. Just a giant bunny butt. And I feel like this is pretty true to what they actually look like. Isn't that right? Isn't that right, bud? He's just looking up at me like, am I a joke to you?
And the answer is yes.
I mean, when I think, like, y'all heard me give a deny it to a cooking game for kids last week or the week before. And, like, that's because I felt like, you know, they didn't really try and there wasn't any heart in it. Like, I'm never going to want to sit here and play My Little Pony personally. But, like, when I imagine myself as a kid playing it, I'm really blown away by those assets. And I don't know. I just think it's going to be a lush experience for the right age group.
Cool. Aki, Jacob, anything you want to chime in with?
As an adult, I liked the game, so
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I thought what I played was okay. I mean, if you've got kids who are young or who are fans of My Little Pony, this is a buy it. If you're not a fan of My Little Pony, I can't really recommend it.
Yeah,
I can't really recommend it, but. I mean, if you get it on sale, it's not like it's definitely not going to be the worst game that you've ever purchased. It's fine for what it is, but you know, as I said, for kids, it's a definite buy it. Adults, no.
All right, I'm trying to look it up to see if there are any sale prices on it right now, but my browser is all like, I don't want to look it up. I want to punch it, but oh well. I guess that is it for this episode. We made it through another one.
Hey.
Though, I wanted to mention, like, Brooke, have you ever played a game called Rabbit Horde? Or Bunny Horde?
Oh, Fluffy Horde?
Fluffy Horde, that's the one. Yeah, look that up. That might be a good
idea. Did we review this last year? Hold on.
Yeah. Yeah, I reviewed it.
You should look into that if you haven't played it. Also, a game I started playing today. It's also a game I started playing today called Pharaoh Rebirth, where you play as a rabbit archaeologist.
Whoa, so. I'm in. No questions asked. Name that archaeologist Indy, and you got a full send.
I don't know if anybody knew or remembered this, but Skyrim actually does in the stats for your character that you can access at any time. There's actually a combat stat called Rabbits Slaughtered, and nice. So it does keep track. If you kill rabbits in that game, it knows.
Yeah, nice. And so do I. I'm keeping track too. So hey, watch it.
I got over 2,500 hours in Skyrim. God. I have never once killed a rabbit.
I thought you were about to say 2,500 rabbits slain. Okay. Chris can live.
Kill the rabbit.
Quick update. My Little Pony is 16 on Xbox right now. So.
Oh, nice.
16, wow. 16 is definitely worth it.
What a deal.
Cool. Yeah. So
it's all about the drive.
Yeah. All right. We're done. Episode's over. Thanks to all you for being here, hanging out, keeping us company. Big thanks to Tim for coming on, doing his thing. Big thanks to Mel Kirk at Zen Studios for giving us an episode with a lot of viewers. maybe it'll repeat. Music this episode. We're going to play another track from Mustin off of a Mario mixtape. That's it. Does anyone have any clean final words to end the show?
Nope.
Take care of all of our woodland friends because they're adorable and they didn't ask to be here. They just want to live peaceful lives.
Night, night, you guys.